Let's dive into the world of Blockbau. We're going to unlock centuries of craftsmanship and innovation, from ancient techniques to some seriously cutting-edge tech.
It's really cool how this research bridges the gap between traditional craftsmanship and the digital age.
Yeah, that's what got me excited about this paper, too.
Buildings that can be assembled and disassembled like a giant sustainable puzzle, you know?
Okay, you've got my attention. But first, what exactly is Blockbau?
So imagine like a giant Lego set for grown-ups, but instead of plastic bricks, you're using interlocking logs.
Ah, I see. This has been around for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Blockbau has been a common building method in Europe for centuries.
Wow, centuries.
Yeah, with roots stretching back to the Bronze Age.
So people were building houses out of logs thousands of years ago. Mm. That's wild. But how did they get those logs to fit together so precisely? Especially without modern tools.
Well, that's where the ingenuity of Blockbau joinery comes in.
Okay, tell me more about that.
They started with simple stacked logs, but, you know, they quickly realized the need for more sophisticated connections.
Makes sense. You can't just stack logs forever and expect a sturdy structure.
Exactly. So over time, they developed incredibly intricate interlocking systems.
Like what? Give us an example.
Well, one of the most notable advancements was the dovetail joint.
The dill joint.
Yeah. Picture a series of interlocking wedges that fit together snugly, creating a bond so tight it's almost invisible.
Wow, that's impressive.
Right. This joint not only created a strong connection, but also helped to minimize air gaps and combat issues like shrinkage.
So they were thinking about energy efficiency and sustainability even back then.
Absolutely. Some carpenters were true masters of their craft, creating joints that were so precise they seemed to disappear. These complex connections were a source of pride, showcasing the craftsman's deep understanding of wood and tools.
It's fascinating how much thought and skill went into those early Blockbau structures.
It really is.
But how did the Industrial Revolution impact Blockbau? Did mass production techniques replace this intricate craftsmanship?
To understand that shift, we need to go back even further to the invention of the printing press.
The printing press. Okay, this sounds unexpected.
It might seem like an odd connection, but bear with me.
Okay, I'm all ears.
So the printing press introduced the concept of the reusable matrix. Think of Gutenberg's individual letters that could be arranged and rearranged to print any text.
Ah, I see where you're going with this.
Right. This idea laid the groundwork for mass production because suddenly you could create many identical copies quickly and efficiently.
So instead of meticulously crafting each piece by hand, you could create a template and reproduce it endlessly.
Exactly. And this concept eventually made its way into architecture.
How so?
Well, the modernist movement embraced mass production techniques and standardized components.
Ah, I see. So things like prefabricated walls and modular units.
Exactly. Think of Le Corbusier's fascination with Ford's assembly line. He envisioned houses being produced like cars, with standardized units rolling off the factory floor.
Was there a specific example of that?
Oh, yeah. His Maison Citroën was even designed to resemble a Citroën car.
Wow, so they were really embracing that industrial aesthetic.
They were. But not everyone was thrilled about the idea of standardized housing, right?
Yeah, I can imagine. It seems like there would be pushback against this idea of uniformity.
You're right, there was.
Who were some of the key voices against this movement?
Well, the arts and crafts movement, led by figures like John Ruskin, strongly opposed this uniformity.
What were their arguments against it?
Ruskin criticized printing for making people used to have everything the same shape, arguing that it robbed objects of their individuality and handcrafted beauty.
So it was a clash between efficiency and affordability on one side and craftsmanship and individuality on the other.
Yeah, sounds familiar, right? Like a debate that's still relevant today.
It definitely is. Mass production made buildings more affordable and accessible, but did it come at the cost of that unique character and craftsmanship that we see in traditional building methods like Blockbau?
It's a valid question for sure.
So we've gone from handcrafted dovetail joints to the mass production of houses.
Right. Pretty big leap.
What's the next chapter in this Blockbau story?
Well, things take another dramatic turn in the mid-20th century with the advent of digital fabrication.
Digital fabrication. Okay, we're jumping ahead a few centuries now.
Yeah. And it all started in 1952 when researchers at MIT connected a computer to a milling machine.
Wow, that's groundbreaking. So instead of a human hand guiding the tool, it was a computer calling the shots.
Precisely. And this led to the development of CNC machines, which revolutionized manufacturing. Suddenly, designs could be created digitally and fabricated with incredible precision by machines.
So this opened up a whole new world of possibilities for design and construction.
Absolutely. And as digital fabrication evolved, we saw a shift from mass production to mass customization.
Wait, so mass production could actually lead to greater individuality?
You got it. This new capability had a huge impact on architecture. The emergence of user-friendly spline modeling software paired with digital fabrication gave rise to a style called parametricism.
Parametricism?
Yeah.
That sounds intriguing. What is that exactly?
Imagine buildings with continuous flowing surfaces that seem to be sculpted from a single piece of material. It's a visually striking style that pushes the boundaries of design. But there's a catch.
I was just about to ask, what's the downside?
Well, there's an inherent contradiction in continuous architecture.
How so?
While it aims for seamlessness, it's still assembled from individual parts.
Right.
And that ultimately limits its adaptability and reconfigurability.
Ah, so even with all this advanced technology, we're still stuck with buildings that are essentially static and difficult to modify.
That's the challenge. But it also leads to a fascinating question. What if buildings could genuinely adapt and evolve over time, just like living organisms? What if we could design structures that are as flexible and responsive as the natural world?
Okay, now you're talking. I'm guessing this is where the idea of discrete architecture comes into play.
You got it. Discrete architecture is based on a system of generic components, kind of like a Lego system.
Where it's the combination of the parts that defines the whole.
Exactly. It's all about connection and aggregation rather than predefined function.
So instead of designing a building with specific fixed elements like walls and roofs, you're creating a system where the components themselves can be assembled in endless ways.
Precisely. And this approach allows for a level of flexibility that traditional modular systems simply can't match.
This is incredible. But how does BlockBau, with its interlocking logs, fit into this world of digital fabrication and discrete architecture? It seems like we've come a long way from those simple wooden structures.
That's what makes this research so fascinating. It draws this unexpected connection, suggesting that BlockBau, with its inherent modularity and emphasis on connection, aligns perfectly with the principles of discrete architecture.
Hold on. Are you saying that this ancient building technique could be the key to a sustainable future of architecture?
That's exactly the proposition. The research paper proposes a new BlockBau system called LOGALP, which uses digitally fabricated blocks made from recycled CLT panels.
LOGALP. I love it. Tell me more.
Well, LOGALP is based on three key pillars: digitalization, recycling, and reuse.
Okay, I am officially hooked.
It utilizes the precision and efficiency of digital fabrication to create modular blocks while addressing the issue of waste by using recycled materials.
You've got digitally fabricated recycled blocks that can be endlessly reconfigured. What's not to love? But how do they actually make these LOGALP blocks?
The researchers partnered with a company called LegnoTech, which specializes in timber construction.
Okay, makes sense. Get the experts involved.
Yeah, and they used a Hundegger K2i machine.
What's that?
It's a state-of-the-art cutting center capable of handling incredibly complex joinery.
So it's like a giant, super precise woodworking robot.
Pretty much. But even with this advanced technology, there were a few challenges.
Oh, what kind of challenges?
Well, the Hundegger is primarily designed for larger components like beams and panels, so working with the smaller LOGALP blocks required some creative problem solving.
I can imagine. But I'm guessing they figured it out.
They did. And the results are impressive. They were able to create a system of interlocking blocks that are both strong and incredibly adaptable. But the real innovation comes in the assembly process, and that's where things get really futuristic.
All right, you've got me on the edge of my seat. How do you actually put these LOGALP blocks together?
Well, this is where it gets really exciting. They used augmented reality glasses and a software plugin called Fullogram to guide the assembly process.
No way. That sounds like something straight out of a science fiction movie.
It's pretty incredible. It makes even complex construction incredibly intuitive.
How so?
Well, the glasses actually highlight the next block to be placed, guiding the builders through the process step by step.
So it's like having a virtual construction manual overlaid on the real world.
Exactly. And it drastically reduces the risk of errors and speeds up the assembly process.
This LOGALP project is seriously impressive. It's like they've taken the best of traditional craftsmanship and fused it with cutting-edge technology.
It truly is a remarkable example of how the past can inform the future.
It has the potential to transform the way we approach building, from design and construction all the way to deconstruction and reuse.
Absolutely.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground, from ancient block bow techniques to the digital revolution. But before we get too carried away with the future, let's take a step back and explore how the world reacted to these innovations in modular construction.
It's important to remember that these advancements weren't always met with open arms.
Yeah, I can imagine the idea of mass-produced housing would rub some people the wrong way.
Right. Take Walter Gropius, for example.
Gropius, yeah. The founder of the Bauhaus.
The one and only. He was a strong advocate for modularity and prefabrication, but even he recognized the potential downsides.
Really? I thought he was all about embracing industrialization.
He was, but he also believed that modular systems should empower individuality, not stifle it.
That makes sense, yeah.
He wanted to create systems that offered flexibility and customization, allowing people to create homes that reflected their own unique needs and tastes.
So he wasn't just about churning out identical boxes.
Exactly. In a way, he was foreshadowing the very principles of discrete architecture that we're discussing today.
That's fascinating. What kind of projects did he work on that embody this vision?
One of his most notable projects was the packaged house system, which he developed with Conrad Waxman in the 1940s.
The packaged house system, what was that all about?
The idea was to create a universal building kit that could be used to construct a variety of housing types, all based on a grid of standardized panels.
It sounds like they were way ahead of their time.
Yeah.
Did their vision catch on?
Unfortunately, no.
What happened?
Despite its innovative approach, the packaged house system faced numerous obstacles, including resistance from the building industry and a lack of government support for prefabricated housing.
Ah, so it never really took off.
Right. In the end, only a few hundred units were ever built.
That's a shame. It seems like a missed opportunity. But did the idea of prefabricated housing just fade away completely?
Not at all. In fact, it continued to evolve, taking different paths in different parts of the world.
Like what? What were some of the different approaches?
Well, in the U.S., the focus shifted towards mass-produced, lightweight housing systems, often using wood framing techniques.
But more like the typical suburban tract housing that we see today.
Yeah, those developments often lacked the design flexibility that Gropius and Waxman had envisioned.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, in Europe, government-funded housing programs led to large-scale experimentation with prefabricated concrete panel systems.
Ah, so things like those massive housing estates in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe.
Exactly.
Those often get a bad rap for being kind of monolithic and impersonal.
Yeah, they do.
But were there any examples of modular construction that kind of bucked this trend? Projects that were both efficient and innovative in their design.
Absolutely. One striking example is Habitat 67, designed by Moshe Sakdi for the 1967 World's Fair in Montreal.
Oh, yeah. Habitat 67, I've seen pictures of that.
It's a complex of interlocking concrete units, each a self-contained apartment, arranged in a visually dynamic and seemingly random configuration.
Yeah, it looks almost like a giant concrete beehive.
It does, and it was absolutely groundbreaking, both architecturally and technically.
In what way?
Well, Safdie's design proved that modularity could be used to create visually dynamic and spatially diverse structures.
A far cry from the monotonous grids of typical prefabricated housing.
Exactly.
So it sounds like Habitat 67 was a real turning point in the perception of modular architecture. Did it inspire other architects to explore new possibilities?
It definitely had an influence, but it also highlighted some inherent limitations of traditional modular systems.
How so?
Even with innovative designs like Habitat 67, these systems were still constrained by the need for specialized components and predetermined configurations.
So we're back to that issue of limited adaptability and reconfigurability.
Right. And this is where the concept of digital material emerges as a potential solution.
Okay, digital material. This sounds like we're going even deeper down the rabbit hole. What exactly does that mean?
Well, think of it as a new kind of building block.
Okay.
One that's defined not by its specific function, but by its potential for connection and aggregation.
So it's not about creating predefined elements like walls or roofs or floors. It's about creating a system of elements that can be combined in endless ways.
Precisely. And the key is that these connections are designed to be easily assembled and disassembled. Think of it like a sophisticated, high-tech Lego system.
Ah, I'm starting to see the connection back to LocAlp and those digitally fabricated blocks. But what makes this concept of digital material so revolutionary?
It challenges the very way we think about designing and building. It moves away from the idea of a building as a static, unchanging object.
And embraces the possibility of structures that are constantly evolving.
Exactly. Adapting to new needs and contexts.
It's like thinking of buildings as living organisms rather than fixed monuments.
That's a great way to put it. And this shift in thinking has profound implications for sustainability, which is a core principle of LocAlp.
Okay, let's talk about sustainability. How does this new approach to modularity make construction more environmentally friendly?
Well, for starters, it encourages the use of recycled materials.
Okay, how so?
Since the focus is on connection and aggregation rather than specialized components, you can utilize a wider range of materials, including those that would traditionally be considered waste.
So those CLT panels that the LocAlp blocks are made from are a perfect example.
Exactly. Instead of ending up as wood chips or pellets, those panels are transformed into high-value building components.
I see.
And because the blocks are designed for disassembly, they can be easily reused or repurposed at the end of their life cycle.
So minimizing waste and reducing environmental impact.
Right. It's about creating a circular economy for construction, where materials are continuously reused and repurposed.
That's amazing. So we're talking about buildings that can be taken apart and reassembled, almost like a giant sustainable Lego set.
Precisely.
It's incredible to think that an ancient building technique like block bow could hold the key to a more sustainable future.
But isn't this whole idea of digital material and discrete architecture still pretty theoretical?
It's an emerging field, for sure.
Yeah.
But there are already some exciting projects that are pushing the boundaries of what's possible.
Like what? Give us some examples.
Well, one architect who's been at the forefront of this movement is Gilles Retzen.
Gilles Retzen.
He's a professor at the Bartlett School of Architecture, and he's been exploring the potential of discrete architecture for several years now.
What kind of work is he doing?
He's been developing cutting-edge systems for robotic fabrication and assembly, creating structures that can be built and reconfigured with remarkable speed and precision.
Robotic fabrication. That does sound straight out of a science fiction movie.
It does, but it's quickly becoming reality.
I guess so. Retzen and others are proving that we can harness the power of digital technology to create buildings that are not only more adaptable and sustainable, but also more responsive to our ever-changing needs.
This is absolutely fascinating. So what's next for this field? Where do we go from here?
Well, I think we're just scratching the surface of what's possible with discrete architecture and digital materials.
There's so much potential to explore.
There is, especially when we look at how these concepts can be applied to real-world building projects. But for now, I think it's time we circle back to the LocAlp project and those incredible augmented reality glasses.
Yes. Let's dive back into those AR glasses and hear about how they were used in the actual construction of the LocAlp pavilion. So those augmented reality glasses, those sounded like a game changer for this project.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They allowed the team to assemble that pavilion quickly and accurately, even with someone who wasn't like a super skilled carpenter.
Exactly. The AR glasses really streamlined the entire building process.
So I'm picturing this. You're wearing these glasses and you see this holographic blueprint overlaid onto the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Must have felt pretty futuristic. But did everything go as smoothly as planned?
Well, there were a few challenges, you know, like there always are with innovative projects.
Oh, of course. What kind of challenges?
Well, for instance, they initially planned to use dovetail joints for those hexagon-shaped connecting pieces.
Ah, those intricate joints we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Makes sense. They're incredibly strong.
Right. But because of some production constraints, they had to use perpendicular cuts instead.
Oh, so they had to kind of adapt on the fly.
That's the nature of innovation, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Encounter an obstacle, adjust your approach.
Find a solution that works.
Exactly.
And that's what I find so fascinating about all this. We're not just talking about, like, you know, abstract theories.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting into the nitty-gritty of how these groundbreaking ideas actually get translated into real-world projects.
Yeah, it's a messy process.
It is.
But it's ultimately about finding solutions.
Exactly. So what happened to the LocAlp pavilion after the trade show? Did they just pack it up and put it in storage?
Well, that's one of the best parts. They disassembled it.
They did.
Yeah, you know, showcasing one of the key features of the system.
Ah, so they can actually take it apart?
Yeah, the blocks and connecting pieces, they can be easily taken apart and stored flat.
Ready for the next project.
Exactly.
That's so cool.
It's so
it really is like a giant sustainable Lego set for architects and builders.
Yeah.
So what's next for LocAlp? Are there plans to build actual buildings using this system? What does the future hold?
Well, that's the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
The research team is continuing to refine the system.
Okay.
Exploring ways to make it even more efficient, more adaptable.
So they're not stopping there.
Not at all. They're also investigating the use of robotic arms for more streamlined and precise fabrication.
Robotic arms building with giant Lego-like blocks.
I know, right?
The future of BlockBao seems incredibly exciting.
It is. This research is really opening up a whole new world of possibilities for sustainable, adaptable, reconfigurable architecture.
Well, I'm so glad we had the chance to take this deep dive into the world of BlockBao.
Me too.
It's inspiring to see how this ancient technique, combined with cutting-edge technology, could shape the future of building, you know, and lead to a more sustainable, adaptable, and resilient built environment.
Absolutely.
What stood out to you the most?
I think for me, it's a reminder that true innovation doesn't always mean reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
Sometimes the most groundbreaking ideas come from reimagining the past.
I like that.
Taking something old and familiar like BlockBao and finding new ways to apply it.
It makes you wonder what other hidden gems from the past might hold the solutions to the challenges we face today.
Right.
And who knows, maybe someday we'll be living in homes and working in offices that are as adaptable and resilient as the natural world itself.
It's an exciting thought.
It is. Structures that can grow, evolve, and be endlessly reconfigured to meet our ever-changing needs.
I love it.
That's a future I am incredibly excited to be a part of.
Me too.
And it's a future we can all help create.
Yeah, absolutely.
We just need to be open to new possibilities, to embrace both ancient wisdom and cutting-edge technology.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, that's a perfect note to end on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the fascinating world of BlockBao. We hope this journey has sparked your curiosity and maybe even inspired you to imagine new possibilities for the future of building. Who knows? Maybe you will be the one to design the next generation of digital materials. Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep building.